Was that up tomorrow?
2 minutes up or down.
It may be. I haven't seen that yet. Is it?
When the guy gets the plan,
the first portion of our schedule deals with the initial public hearing on three four bills within the Code of Corrections package. And Judge Reagan is here, I believe. Judge, I have one witness signed, and I think we're probably going to have a little extended dialogue with you. I think I'll take Sheriff Dole, and then we'll call on you for a minute. Jack?
Representative Myers, members of the committee, I'm Sheriff Jack Dolan from Benton County and representing the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. Without arguing the merits of a pre-sentence investigation, I'll advise you as to at least the primary reason why the Oregon State Sheriff's Association is interested in sponsoring and presenting this legislation. We feel that if the court had the option of making the determination as to the need for a pre-sentence investigation, that it could potentially reduce the amount of time that people are sitting in our county facilities awaiting a pre-sentence report. The average period of time for a pre-sentence investigation amounts to about 30 days. We're doing everything we can to solve space problems in our facilities, and as I say, notwithstanding the merits of whether a pre-sentence investigation is necessary in all cases, this is the primary motivation and primary reason for the support of this legislation. Do you have any questions of me?
Questions for Sheriff Dillon? Okay, I guess not.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. Two of these bills one of these bills was sponsored at the request of the Marion County District Attorney. Is he represented today? 2819, dealing with the parole board's procedures on overturning court-imposed minimums, was sponsored by Representatives Courtney Gilmore and Jim Hill. Gentlemen, do you have any comments or testimony you'd like to share with us?
Yes, sir. Let's go ahead
and do that.
Thank you so very much.
The dynamic duo here.
You still have a camera?
Guys, wearing the same blue today, matching shirts. That's nice. Mm-hmm.
But the government's only going to last you a lot of people. They start out.
Tell if you want to leave, you can. You don't have to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Peter Courtney, State Representative, District 33. And there's a little bill in front of you, which, my understanding, I discussed it with Hazel Hayes and some of the parole board members in a sort of a general way before I had the idea, and then I discussed it briefly with her as of several weeks ago. What the bill does is says that the parole board shall notify the district attorney and the circuit court in the county in which an individual was convicted and sentenced on a felony, and when they are considering overturning their minimum term of imprisonment or considering them for parole, it says not only shall they be notified, but they shall also be given an opportunity if the district attorney and or the circuit court judge who is involved, a representative of the court, desires to come before the parole board for input. It's as simple as that, Mr. Chair. And what's involved here is to make sure that the parole board hears from both the district attorney and the court who were involved in the process at the court level in deciding whether or not there was guilt or innocence and what the sentence should be.
Representative Hill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, distinguished committee.
The witness needs to identify himself.
Representative Jim Hill, District 31, South and West Salem. Right now, there is a great deal of suspicion with regard to what is happening with the parole board, particularly as the relationship between the district attorneys and the parole board. The purpose of this bill is to give input through the district attorney for the people who were involved, the victims, and so forth. And I think if the public knows that the district attorney will be there to know that there will be representation of the people in front of the parole board, it would give the system more credibility and improve relationships between the district attorneys and the parole board. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I might add that I don't know if anyone at the parole board has signed up to testify. They have distributed a written statement in which they say that philosophically they're in agreement with the bill. With all due respect, their one concern is any kind of cost impact in terms of notice requirement in deference to them. They were hoping that this could be made a corrections division responsibility in terms of the actual notice requirement. It also should not be viewed, I hope, Mr. Chair, as an anti-parole board bill. That's not what's intended at all. In fact, they come under such heat all the time. They are the whipping boy and whipping girl, I'm convinced, of the correctional system. More than any other element of the correctional system, whether you're talking judges, a district attorney, defense attorneys, whether you're talking whatever, the parole board is the one that's slammed around rightly or wrongly all the time. And it's our feeling, both Representative Hills and myself, that if this kind of input or structural input was allowed, that it would enhance or help them tremendously in making their decisions, because they wouldn't be subject to the statement that, in effect, that the district attorney or the judges had an opportunity to speak to them regarding a particular heinous crime. And let's face it, that's what we're talking about. And it could very well be, Mr. Chair, you may want to limit it to just a special number of real bad crimes, because those are the celebrated cases that cause all the furor over the parole board and how the parole board does its job.
Questions of our distinguished colleagues?
No questions.
I don't know what the candidates are.
A couple of questions here. In drafting this bill, you envisioned the parole board making a preliminary decision to overturn a mandatory minimum and then contacting the judge and DA, and then after a reasonable period of time has passed, then making a final decision to overturn. Is that how it was envisioned, or?
It wasn't envisioned at all. The parole board holds a hearing in which an inmate is going to come before them to decide what to do with him. You know, they were designed simply to involve overturning a minimum that, in effect, that they make sure the DAs is told, and judge is told to give them an opportunity if they choose to avail themselves.
Okay, I don't know so much about this procedure. What is does a prisoner petition the parole board and say, I'd like to have my mandatory minimum overturned. Can I have a hearing on it? Is that what goes on? Or?
Well, I will defer to the expertise of the better members of the committee. But I understand, because of the matrix, there's set periods of time which trigger in. And,
yeah.
And that's the petitioning is one thing, but they're given a regular parole review of their case at certain times. And according to our system now, we're talking about that regular review process, plugging in the DA, the circuit court judge, regarding certain types of felons. That's all.
It just gives them a right to appear.
You should know this tracks, Mr. Chair, on executive clemency and the law on executive clemency. If you recall, those of us in the committee, the better members, remember what happened to us, is that if the governor is going to consider executive clemency, the judge must notify, when a petition comes to him from an inmate, the district attorney and the circuit court judge, and I believe even some others, in the county where the individual was sentenced, before the governor makes his or her decision. So there is already in structure, in law, that kind of procedure to make sure that the chief executive office of the state of Oregon, before making the decision on clemency, make sure that these key law enforcement people are having input. We're tracking on that kind of thinking here in terms of the parole board, which is making significant decisions regarding felons.
Here's my concern. If then under the matrix system, a certain prisoner that's been given a mandatory minimum, his or her time comes up for a parole hearing, and a judge gets the notice that this person could potentially have his mandatory minimum overturned, that judge is going to have to go back to the file and re-research the case. Because I think in many cases, the judges send them on their way and don't really remember all the, you know, save in their long-term memory all the details of what someone has done. And in some situations, there would be where the parole board could see that the person had absolutely no chance of having the mandatory minimum overturned, such as they've caused a lot of trouble when they're in the penitentiary or something. And yet the judge might think, gee, this is a very, this person caused a very serious crime down in our community. And the judge does spend hours in research and drafting letters to stop what he feels may be an overturn of the mandatory minimum, in which in such case the parole board was never going to do any such thing. Do you see what I'm saying about a potential? Is there a way we can just focus in on those where it's very, there's a high probability of the mandatory minimum being overturned?
Well, Representative Scavera, the judge does not have to do all of that. The contact does not have to be that formal. And if the judge chooses to go through all of that, the judge can, but it's not necessary. There can be more informal contact with the parole board to find out, the judge could find out preliminary whether he or she wants to go through that process.
Well, I see, maybe they could have some, I see what you're saying, some kind of communication.
Yes, it's an option that's left open, and as Representative Courtney mentioned, more likely than not, the situation is not going to arise very often, and I would suspect that the cases that would be of most concern would be fresh in the judge's mind.
May I ask a follow-up? You know, I'm sorry, but just a minute. I wanted to follow on that,
yeah,
that question, because if I track what you're saying, you've got to, presumably in open meetings, I don't know the subject of open meetings law or not, but you've got a problem of the board meeting in advance to find out whether there's going to be four members to overturn something before a judge or a DA should start worrying. And so it's a chicken and the egg problem that Representative Scarra is pointing out, that a judge or a DA isn't going to get notice unless the board somehow or another has by premonition decided that probably four people are going to most likely overturn it. So unless we're going to ask every DA and every judge who's ever sentenced or ever prosecuted to watch every single case, how are we going to target those cases to send notice out on? Has the parole board already met behind closed doors and said four of us are going to go and release this mandatory minimum sentence? This is one of the ones we better notify the judge and tell him that he has a chance to appear now. Where's the triggering mechanism is what Representative Scavera is asking. Or is it going to be one of these things where a judge leaves a note in the parole board's file forever and ever and ever, if you ever should decide to reduce the mandatory minimum in this case, I want to be notified. But until the parole board's actually met and gotten a 4-5, 4-1 vote, we don't know which one's getting notice.
Chair, Representative Smith, my understanding, I didn't know, or maybe you do, that the parole board's procedures are that informal. That they do, because of the matrix system, there is a definite parole structure in terms of the amount of time that has to go by before an individual is eligible to come up for their official hearing, and that is a very structured situation, and if it isn't, then that's news to me. And you're talking about individuals who we're talking about, and I thought that those of us, and you were one of them who dealt with this, in order to overturn certain types of sentences, you had to have 4 out of the 5,
right?
So we're talking about bad hombres, real bad hombres. There aren't that many of them, but they're the kind of thing that we want to be very careful about. It's the kind of thing that gets the public in an uproar. There is an official time in which their cases are reviewed according to the structure. And when that time comes, per law, if this were to pass, notice goes to the DA's office of the court, and or the court, to let them know that this is hearing that comes up, and they can avail themselves, if they choose to do so, saying, well, we think you should know this type of thing. I don't know that, I guess I don't see the cumbersome nature of this. Maybe it's because I'm missing something, though.
Well, and maybe I need Hazel or someone to come forward, Mr. Chairman, to clear up what I think Representative Scavera has put his finger on. That is, the parole board either is getting on the phone in advance and saying, have you seen the numbers or the set on John Doe? This looks like one of the ones that four of us would probably agree on. I don't know that they're allowed to get on the phone and all agree in advance without being on the record. But if, unless they are, there is no way to know until the date comes up and they actually take their vote as a record vote, and you find out that it is a 4-1 situation before they would be able to notify the appropriate DA.
Well, I thought, though, that regardless of whether they spend time on the phone or not, they still must schedule the hearing and they must hold the hearing. I don't care if we're talking about Jerome Brutus or Samples or the guy did the number that he did down in Ashland to the two girls. Regardless of how heinous the crime is and how matter of fact it is that they're going to be denied parole, they still must go through the process and they must hold the parole hearing. It's my understanding. And in those circumstances, regardless, even if it's absolutely certain they're not going to parole them and no one even consider it, because of the nature of the crime, the seriousness of the crime, they, if we come up with a list, you know, and I realize that this says four out of five, those types of aggravated murder situations, they must notify the DA, if for no other reason, to make sure that that county, which was impacted the most, has an opportunity, if they choose to do so, through their elected officials, both the judge and or the DA, to come forward and make known their feelings. I agree that it may be a whitewash, that is, there's simply nothing to consider, but they still, I understand, and I'm now looking to Representative Rutherford, Representative Lombard, Representative Smith, and Representative Myers, who I believe all participated in the matrix decisions in 77, that the structure is there.
Yeah, I'm sensitive to what Representative Rivera has raised, and I think there's a problem.
I think that what we best do is take up that aspect of it when we can have a representative parole board here. Someone may be over later. We did try to reach them to make sure they were going to be here, and before we got with the staffers and they weren't sure. If they are here today, we'll come back to it. We'll come back to it with a view to getting, I want their views in person on this kind of a bill, and I want a chance to find out how they see the practical problem being as well.
Good.
Is funny, gentlemen?
We just have noted the treatment that we've received from the House Judiciary Committee, and that we're taking numbers and names.
Actually, I think your treatment's been quite courteous.
Representative Hill said they have turned on us. That's how he described it, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I'm devoted to making this bill work if there's any possible way.
That is a turn.
Thank you both very, very much.
I'll help for it with the same thing.
Judge?
Gentlemen, with your indulgence, I'd like to take just a couple of minutes and really depart from the bills that you were considering today. My name is Frank Uroguin. I'm a circuit judge from southeastern Oregon, which includes Mount Hear and Arnie counties. I had the opportunity to serve on your sentencing task force, presently on the Advisory Commission for Parole Standards and Guidelines, and that's primarily why I'm here. I was on it from the original 1977. I'm now chairman. So in part, I guess I'm responsible for what is often referred to as the matrix. Presently also on what we call the Oregon Prison Overcrowding Project. The one subject that I would like to address is, we had a commission meeting this morning, and this is the way we see the situation so far as inmate numbers. We recognize that there probably will be some reluctance in addressing numbers directly. We do feel, though, that someone before the end of the calendar year will be forced to decide what to do with respect to our growing numbers in some sort of meaningful way. The Corrections Division has had remarkably accurate predictions so far as population numbers, in my view, from 1977, since I've become associated with the Commission. We would like to raise this as a trial balloon, and so far as the Parole Commission includes the five members of the Parole Board, five circuit judges appointed by the Chief Justice, and then the Governor's Legal Counsel, what we would like to raise as a trial balloon is, although we think that we probably have the necessary legislative language to be able to deal directly through the Commission and then in turn through the Parole Board to deal with the numbers question,
we are reluctant to do so without some form of further legislative direction. I have now the commitment of the parole board and a majority of the judges that in the event that we do not address the numbers question directly, and by that I'm referring, for instance, even if we put online the 350-bed facility in Pendleton, which is presently proposed, it is recognized that it will not solve the numbers program or problem. So what we are suggesting is, in the event that the legislature sees fit, and I guess we would initiate it through this committee, then we would be willing to address the problem directly. And in essence, the idea would be something along these lines. We would not do it through the matrix as we did 2 years ago. That experience has been rather disastrous in our view. We, though, when we reach a certain point so far as numbers, would in essence at this point come up with some sort of a means to prioritize those individuals who would in fact be released and the conditions under which they would be released. And in essence, we simply would go about that sort of a task. If the legislature is willing to at least give us some sort of direction along those lines, and after we have thoroughly explored this with the governor's office, in essence, what I'm simply saying is, I probably will be back near the end of the session as we see how things are developing to, in fact, see what your pleasure might be in that regard.
Judge, I think that the issue you raise is one that this committee is going to have to look at. In one or another of maybe three or four forms of possible action. The question I have, as you describe the proposal, this particular approach is, first, do you feel it is more appropriate that the function you are describing be vested in the particular body you are chairing as opposed to the board itself? And secondly, let's deal with that first.
No, I do not feel that it is necessarily more appropriate, but I recognize the reality too from the parole board's point of view. They are going to be, in essence, the point of any movement along these lines. In essence, they simply want our concurrence and guidance in working out what sort of priority should be made. In the end, though, since we are advisory and set up statutorily in that sort of a pattern, it would be the parole board who would make the final decision.
Well, I see. You're talking about an advisory role in this regard also.
Everything we do is theoretically advisory, so we have the understanding as to how things will be carried out.
Right. My other question is, if the legislature were to put in place some direction with respect to ongoing population control, would you regard it as more desirable that the legislature itself attempt to designate what maximum capacities are for the various institutions against which the decisions relating to release would be framed, or do you feel that should be left more to an administrative type determination, with your role again advisory? How do you see the standard being identified which would trigger the necessity for some action?
Number one, our view would be, and we, I feel, are unanimous on this point, we would prefer that the legislature do it. We can understand possibly the reluctance to in fact get into that particular aspect. And what we are saying is, we have looked and tried to figure out who will do what in the event that we reach that point. And it really, to us, is this sort of a consideration. We face potential federal intervention, and do we simply prefer that sort of a course as opposed to doing something internally? And in essence, if the legislature does not do it, which we would prefer, because we really do not want this rule. We are not actively seeking it, but we are simply saying if there is seemingly no one else left to do it as we draw near the end of the session, then we feel we should come forward and in essence simply say we recognize it has to be done. We apparently are the logical agency. We probably have the legislative authority now, but before we actually jump in, we would seek some further direction because it is a substantial step, in essence, to be determining some sort of an interpretation of capacity and then a means for dealing with numbers beyond that sort of capacity numbers.
My last question, and this is one of what I have run through my mind whenever this issue of state capacity is on my mind, and that is, can we detach a strategy of state population control from local jail capacities, controls?
Can we?
Yes. Local, yes. Feasibly.
We could. The difficulty, of course, and I know that all of you are very aware of the fact that local facilities are in such a state now that that simply would accentuate the local problem. And I guess, in essence, if I read what you're saying correctly, for instance, we could impose some sort of limitations as to the numbers that could actually come in some way. And I'm not sure that that does anything except in turn pass it back to the local government. I guess you can turn around though and say what I am proposing to do at the state level in essence may in fact do exactly the same thing, and if you were to point that out to me I would certainly have to agree. But in essence it's simply the means that we see that has to be initiated and taken by some body, and we are seeing these growing numbers on a month-to-month basis of our sets, and we are increasing now at about, the number this morning was thrown out at about 40. Well, that's subject to some interpretation, but we are in fact reaching the point of demanded attention.
We are going to take the issue up.
I recognize.
And if you could stay in communication with the committee as to further discussions you have with the governor or others, we will want to be in more extended discussion with you at the time we take,
all right,
take specific questions.
The other subject, since if I can beg off on this, I get the opportunity to come over very seldom. It's on sentencing, and I recognize that you're taking on a very complex subject, but I would like to make just a couple of comments. I served on the task force, and from my perspective, the task force proposal was in essence attempting to address what was perceived as a demand by the judiciary for more responsibility, or at least more control, I should say, with respect to sentencing in general. I supported that particular proposal and in fact would prefer to see the judges assume a more meaningful role with respect to actual time to be served. I have faced this though. I recognize I am in a decided minority. I do not speak for my judicial brothers at all and sisters. Simple fact of the matter is that from my perspective at this point, the judiciary is reluctant to assume that sort of responsibility. On the other hand, I know too that you are going to be facing the consideration of simply an in-out decision by the judge. And on this, I simply feel that even if you institute that sort of a proposal, that there are certain factors which are better decided at the judicial level, particularly with respect to the matrix, criminalist risk assessment score, crime severity ratings, in essence, factors which will determine the actual amount of time to be served. and then, of course, aggravation and mitigation. The parole board, and at least those of us on the commission, feel that it is better served to be done in an adversarial setting. I feel it can be done. I have done it now for approximately 5 years. I don't pretend to have the number of criminal cases that they have in some jurisdictions. But if you compare my caseload, in essence, I have as heavy a schedule as anyone in the state. And in essence, I'm simply saying that even if you go that particular way and depart from the task force proposal, I would like to still see the judges forced to share in that sort of decision-making process which affects those sort of time considerations, because I think it's better done before the trial court and before the parole board. And I simply think the public is better served, and that it is, at least from my view, it's sort of, so far as the judge is my view, we don't want it all, or we don't want anything, and neither approach is reasonable. It should be some sort of a middle ground. So I hope, in essence, that you do not let the judiciary off with simply an in-out.